You're listening to the Life with Old Dogs podcast, and I'm your host, Dawn Mimnaugh, primary caretaker of all of our wonderful senior German Shepherds right here at Woody's Place Senior German Shepherd Sanctuary. You're listening to the Life with Old Dogs podcast, and I'm your host, Dawn Mimnaugh, primary caretaker of all of our wonderful senior German Shepherds right here at Woody's Place Senior German Shepherd Sanctuary.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate this.
Oh, so do we. Absolutely. So if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and Epi for Dogs as an organization, we would appreciate that.
Okay. Well, obviously, my name is Alicia Kennedy, and I have a background in my other life as a financial research analyst, but I've always had dogs. I've always worked with dogs. I was a search and rescue canine trainer. I did therapy work with my dogs. I actually imported a little Spanish water dog from Spain because I was going to start a service dog line for border patrol. Needless to say, that is where my life with EPI began. My dog got sick. Anyway, we started EPI for Dogs in May 25th, 2008. It's been in existence for 14 years. We became a 501c3 public charity in 2014, and our mission in short is twofold. Number one, it's to bring awareness to EPI, and number two, it's to promote EPI research. EPI is part of when you have a dog and they start having a lot of loose stools and you just can't figure out what is going on, of course, you bring it to the vet tests it for Giardia and it's not Giardia. And then you start examining all kinds of stuff. Well, what happens is that in the pancreas produces some, in the exocrine part of the pancreas, there's two parts to the pancreas. The exocrine part of the pancreas, which is really 99% of your pancreas, produces digestive enzymes, lipase, amylase, and protease. Well, what happens in EPI is little by little, these enzymes are, for whatever reason, stop being produced in the pancreas, or there's not enough of them being produced in the pancreas. So therefore, when the dog starts to eat, he doesn't have any digestive enzymes to digest the food for him or her. So whatever's going in one end is coming out the other end. And the dog is literally starting to starve. And they start eating more and more and more, and they're losing weight, and you can't figure out what in the world is going on. And unfortunately, years ago, when I first started with this, they said it was a German Shepherd disease. And if you had a dog that was not a German Shepherd or a rough-coated collie, they didn't check for EPI. But I was lucky to have a vet that was an old country vet, and he had a lot of common sense. And he said, well, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it just might be a duck. So he said, let's test her for EPI. And they just struggle. Now, EPI can also happen in varying degrees. Some dogs can have it really bad, and some dogs can appear to have just a small touch of it, and they could kind of get away with cheating, not having enzymes all the time. So it's, you know, the best thing to do is don't guess, but have your dog tested. It's a blood test for EPI. Now I mentioned the enzymes, digestive enzymes. With EPI, there are three main enzymes, the amylase, lipase, and protease. Amylase is to digest the carbs. Lipase is to digest the fats. Protease and trypsin is to digest the protein. So the enzymes that you get today have all three components of these enzymes in them. And my thing with an EPI dog is to treat the whole dog. It's not just throwing a few enzymes on the food. And basically, there's four aspects to EPI. There's number one, you have to have
EPI. But yes. Could you tell us what EPI stands for?
Okay, it stands for exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. And like I mentioned, what people don't realize is, you know, you think pancreas, you think diabetes automatically. Well, the pancreas, the majority of it is exocrine acinar cells. Only 1% of it is endocrine cells, which is related to diabetes. So yeah, it's kind of interesting that this doesn't get as much focus as diabetes does or something, because there's so much more to the pancreas than just diabetes.
Sure.
When the endocrine is not properly functioning.
Right.
Yeah, it's, you know.
We've had seniors here with pancreatitis.
Uh-huh.
That is the extent. We haven't had any diabetes and we haven't had EPI, but we have had pancreatitis a few times. And I know that it's scary. It's it's actually very scary. On several different occasions, it turned into HGE.
Mm-hmm.
So that in and of itself was scary. The first time, you know, was just
that's the bacteria, the HGE. Yeah.
Right. It's the bacteria. Right, but as far as the pancreas goes, that's the extent of our knowledge.
End stage chronic pancreatitis is EPI. So if a dog has chronic pancreatitis, it means that their, you know, pancreas is getting hammered over and over again. Well, sometimes it gets attacked so often with these, you know, chronic pancreatitis flare-ups that one day it says, okay, that's it, I'm done. And it starts eating itself. Once it starts eating, because chronic pancreatitis is where the pancreas is inflamed. EPI is when that's happened way too many times and the pancreas is like, okay, I'm done. It starts eating itself. Once that happens, that means the pancreas is atrophying. And once that happens, that turns into EPI. Now, that's what we call secondary EPI. In other words, this EPI case happened because of some other condition like chronic pancreatitis.
Okay.
Primary EPI is when you have a dog that's, say, anywhere between 3 months and 4 years old. Nothing's wrong with them. And all of a sudden, poof, they've got EPI. I mean, you know, with the loose stools and all that stuff. We think that there's a genetic component to that, but there's also something else going on, whether it's environmental, metabolomics, something weird, because we've done genetic studies. We're going to do more genetic studies. We just started again to, you know, better technology. Let's see if we can find out what's going on to see if we can find that. We've found 20% of this allele is turned off in German Shepherd dogs, but that's not enough to explain the whole disease. So that's why we're doing another genetic study, but we're also doing a metabolomic study, microbiota, you know, with the gut and everything, to see, okay, is there a connection? You know, is there a connection there also? What is going on? Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's two levels or two different ways that you can develop EPI, chronic and secondary and primary.
Now you're talking about new studies, new technologies,
yes.
But when we were talking off camera, you indicated that they knew about this back in the mid 1800s.
Yes.
That is shocking.
It is shocking.
That they've known about this for that long and yet.
No answers.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of like what started me starting EPI for dogs. When my dog was diagnosed with EPI, it was because she was not a German Shepherd and they never heard of it. And if I didn't have a savvy vet who was practical, I never would have discovered that. So I finally found a Yahoo group that was very helpful with me and other EPI parents on how to manage your EPI dog. But what I didn't like about the group was whatever they told you, it was very holistic. And, you know, a lot of stuff worked and it was really great information, but they did not want you to share anything that they told you with your vet. I didn't care for that. That was weird. I thought, you know, if everybody would work together, the vets with the pet owner and the dog has a better chance of doing better.
Absolutely.
So that kind of did not sit well with me. And then what I started doing was I started calling all the veterinarian schools in the United States to see who would do research with me on this. I got connected to Texas A&M University, the gastrointestinal lab, and they were very helpful. I found out that they actually did do some studies, but then they didn't go anywhere with it. And then the developer of the TLI test, the TLI test is the gold standard blood test for EPI. he contacted me and he said that if you don't have money, but you have a lot of passion about something, you can get the wheels turning on research. So he said that I had a lot of passion. He took me under his wing. And because of him and my experience with nobody's finding anything out, I started EPI for Dogs. Way back in 1850, Claude Bernard, he was what you would call, I guess, the father of physiology. He found out that they did tests on dogs where they damaged the pancreas because he suspected, and he was right, that the pancreas produces these and he didn't call them enzymes at that point, but they produced a substance that digested food for us. And when they did all this testing on these dogs, the dog that did live, because most of them died, it was sad the way they did these experiments. But anyway, yeah,
I agree.
Which is horrible. But I mean, that was way back in the 1850s. The dog that did live all of a sudden had a voracious appetite, was eating everything in sight. The stools were big cow plops and they were yellow to gray, you know, pale consistency. They were everything that we see today. So that dog had EPI. So it started way back then. And even like the medicine that they use for people who have EPI is called Creon. We now use it for dogs if we can't get the powder. That was actually developed in 1906 in Germany, or early 1900, before 1910. So this has been around for a long, long time. And yet 150 years later, we've got dogs with EPI and we don't know why it happens. And we don't, you know, they weren't even looking at the whole dog, you know, so this annoyed me. I mean, I was really hot.
So, well, I'm sure many other dog parents who have a dog with EPI feel the exact same way. I know I feel that way with degenerative myelopathy with dogs. I mean, what is going on here?
Yeah, why not?
Why can't we figure this out?
So we started with that, but I was very lucky to where I had these veterinarian researchers who took me under their wing.
That's fantastic.
They guided me to, you know, how to approach the subject, what to ask on my website, how to relay research information to the general public. So it was really good. And you know, then we started going to like the AVMA conferences, the ACVIM conferences. I found veterinarians were teaching other vets with my website, EPI for Dogs, to, you know, teach them about EPI. We were approached by schools. So, you know, veterinarian schools. So it became way more than what I expected. I wanted when I first started was I wanted one place where people could go because their dog was sick and they could look at the symptoms and say, I could go to my vet and ask them to run this TLI test, whatever it is. This is how you do the test. This is the food that you feed. This is, you know, and any new research that comes out, it's on this website. So I wanted one place where vets can go, because all vets, the vet who initially diagnosed my dog, he showed me what he learned about EPI in his textbook. It was one paragraph long. That was it. And he said, Alicia, this is why we don't know anything about it, because we're not taught anything about it. So I wanted everything to be under one umbrella. Right. And I did accomplish that. And vets do go to my site. They do use it. They do use it as a teaching tool. We have a 24/7 forum to where people have issues. That everything's free. You just sign in and, you know, we do the best we can to help you. A lot of what has come about, and the researcher who took me under his wing, he explained this to me, is a lot of research that has bubbled since we've started this is because we will notice something as people, as pet owners, some reaction that we're seeing in our EPI dogs. And we're scratching our heads and we're saying, gee, I wonder why that happens. Or gee, we think it happens because of this. Well, if enough of it happens, they do research about it. And a lot of times it may not be our reasoning of why it happened, our anecdotal reasoning may not be exactly why it was happening, but it was happening because of something we noticed, and research will follow. So that's been wonderful because of my website and because of all the pet people who come and talk about stuff. We've actually prompted more research about EPI, which is what I wanted to do.
And I just think that's great because your website, first of all, it is incredibly comprehensive.
Oh yeah.
It is incredibly comprehensive and you are a plethora of information on there, but I love the fact that it's evolving. It's constantly evolving.
Yes.
It's not like you go on there and your website hasn't been updated since 2014. Your website's constantly evolving because the information is constantly evolving. And you were talking about the study dogs back in the 1800s. Well, today's dogs are technically the study dogs.
Yes.
But they're not living in a lab. They're living with their beloved pet owners who are really trying to be a part of this mission to help get to the bottom of this, I'm going to say it, it's awful, disease that some of our dogs are suffering from.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I'm really pleased with, and I know it's hard for some people to say, oh, this is what you do in 2008, and then 2015 comes along and you've got to change the whole thing. We really take pride in the fact that we, because we work with or collaborate with the researchers, a lot of times something is said or done and we think that's true. And then better research, better technology comes along and we find out, whoops, that wasn't exactly right. You know, sometimes what we have said has been turned on its head, but I really take a lot of pride in being sharing this with the public that nothing is set in stone. It's forever evolving. You know, the better research that we have, the more we find out about stuff.
Well, and that's true for many things. Sometimes what may be right and the best we have to offer back in 2014, of course, it evolves. And then when we hit 2022, and like you said, there's more technology, there's more research, there are more answers, then we update what was good back in 2014. So that's totally understandable. And for you to say it's not set in stone, well, you would think, in my mind, most people would understand that. But I guess it does need to be said.
Yeah, it does. And a lot of it is when we first started, I was talking to, I'll never forget the geneticist, that one of the researchers that we deal with. She said when they had a meeting, she would ask people in her room, how many of you have had an EPI dog case? And she said maybe one would raise their hand or none would raise their hand. Fast forward to a few years later, you know, after we started this and brought more awareness to it, she said, now you ask the same question and more than half the room will raise their hands.
Because they didn't know.
You know, a lot of times it was missed. It was misdiagnosed, not only because they didn't have the information or they didn't think that breed got it. When we first started going to conferences, we had a map up where we showed all different breeds that were diagnosed. And we finally gave up because it was easier to post the breeds that have not been diagnosed, because just about every breed now has been diagnosed with EPI. A lot of Chihuahuas. Who would have thunk it? I mean, from German Shepherd to Chihuahuas. Let's think about this.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't connect the dots.
Well, you don't. And it is curious as to, like you're saying, are more dogs being diagnosed because it's not it's not breed specific anymore, or is something else happening, or is it a combination of things?
Yeah,
absolutely. So for those who don't know, what are the symptoms of EPI?
Okay. I'll give you a list of symptoms, but the thing you have to walk away with is real basic. If you think there's something wrong with your dog, there probably is something wrong with your dog.
Okay. Hallelujah. I sound like a broken record because I say that all the time when people send emails, my dog's doing this, my dog's doing that. I always say, take them to the vet. Take them to the vet. You have to get your dog checked out.
If mama thinks something's wrong, there's something wrong.
Right. Okay. I totally agree with that.
Now, the symptoms that I'm going to tell you about EPI, some dogs will display all these symptoms. Some dogs will display some of these symptoms. And some dogs will actually display none of these symptoms, but you just get that niggly feeling that there's something wrong. There's something not right. Okay. The first thing is, they start wasting away. All of a sudden, they look a little skinnier, and you're like, I didn't notice that before. Well, maybe they're not eating much, or maybe it's summertime, or blah, blah, blah. Watch it. Then, but they continue to lose weight no matter how much food you are giving. I'll give you an example. With my Spanish water dog, she was 35 pounds. She initially was only on 2 cups of food a day, you know, morning and night. And then just before she got diagnosed, she was eating 9 cups of food a day and losing weight. She lost over 35% of her weight. That's a lot.
Especially for a little dog.
Yeah, for a little dog. That's a lot. So, you know, it's something like that. Like, wait a minute, something's not right. Okay. The most common symptom is the stools. They'll start having frequent stools, and the stools will look like cow plop patties. Mm-hmm. Usually the color is yellow, gray, some kind of pale color. And yes, if you feed your dog a chicken-based food or some kind of bird food, bird fowl-based, it'll be light-colored, where if you go with beef-based food, it tends to be a little darker. So yeah, that plays into it. But I mean, this is really in your face, light colored. Yeah, really okay. Pronounced. So okay. That's the most common symptom, but it doesn't mean that every single dog's going to have that symptom, but I'd say about 90% of them do. Okay. The frequency can go from two times a day to 10 times a day. There's something wrong here. Yeah. Okay. Then some dogs will have, instead of the cow plop, they'll have watery diarrhea. But just as my observation from all the people that have come through EPI for dogs, that usually means if it is EPI, that's EPI with something else, a concurrent condition like EPI and IBD. A lot of times when they start displaying watery stools and they do have EPI, it tends to be some kind of food intolerance too. Okay, IBD, it could even be PLE, it could be IBS, etc. Anyway, so the watery stools, some dogs will vomit, but it's not really, it's like a regurgitation of food. It's just not sitting right. And there's like a lot of bile acid stuff going on. And then there's the farts. If your dog starts having a lot of tummy noises and farting a whole lot, that's a lot of times an indication of EPI, because that would be SID, which is small intestinal dysbiosis. But the dogs will also have that if they get into something they shouldn't, and they just have small intestinal dysbiosis. Anyway, so those are the most common things. If it goes on for a long time, like my dog did, and they didn't figure it out until my vet, came through with common sense. If they start eating weird stuff or just eating anything and everything, except okay. They'll start eating their own feces. They'll start eating the carpet. They'll eat a box of crayons. There's all kinds of stories where it's the appetite is horrendous. And my dog, towards the end, I think it was a week before she was, we got the results back in, she was getting almost feral when she was eating. I mean, she was eating her stools and she was hovering over it like, don't you dare take this away from me. Well, what it is they're starving.
Right.
Well, they're eating all this food and you're doing your best to feed them. You're trying everything and nothing is working. Well, their body is starting to starve itself. And sure. If an EPI dog does not get diagnosed or treated and it keeps on going, they will starve to death. Now, whether this means they die from starvation or one of their organs will failure from organ starvation failure. That's a horrible, horrible way to go.
Oh, absolutely. So, and you as the dog owner, you're just desperate trying to do whatever you can. And as you said, I mean, they're putting leaves, they're putting rocks, anything in their stomach to try to feel satisfied.
Yeah,
right.
That's what it is. It's a horrible thing to watch. And you don't know what's going on. If you have a dog that's not a German Shepherd, because German Shepherd, at least some of the vets nowadays will say, okay, let's test it for EPI.
Right.
If it was a non-German Shepherd, they don't even think of this.
They should now. I want to back up a second, because you were talking about EPI with IBS and PLS. Could you tell our listeners what that is?
IBD is like... IBD. Yeah, sorry. IBD.
I knew it's yeah. Okay, yeah,
IBD.
Too many letters together there for this ADHD brain.
IBD, and it's actually pretty common with this, where a dog will have EPI and IBD. What it means is they don't have, you've got EPI, so you need digestive enzymes on all your food because you no longer are producing enough or any of those digestive enzymes to digest your food. Well, you're doing everything right and somehow your dog is still having loose stools. What is going on? And you've tried all kinds of foods. Nothing is working. And you've tried the probiotics, the prebiotics. I'll get into this later. You've gone through all the steps you have to go through to treat the whole dog with EPI. And it's still having loose stools. Okay, something's wrong. It's the diet. So if a lot of times they'll have a sensitivity to something, let's say chicken, because chicken's in everything. And you have no idea. Well, it's not in other words, what people don't realize is the enzymes are working on the EPI. You're not seeing EPI. You are now seeing the results of something like IBD, irritable bowel syndrome, mm-hmm. or diagnosis, whatever they call it. I just call it IBD. What we suggest to people is you start doing this, strip it down and start doing a food elimination and try to figure out what food is triggering this. A lot of times people don't have the patience or they don't have the time because they work or whatever, you know, right. It takes a lot of time to do this. So what I'll recommend is go ahead, talk to your vet, put your dog on a prescription diet, hydrolyzed. It has to be a true hydrolyzed diet. There's only about five versions of hydrolyzed food out there, and see if that helps. If that helps, then you've already bypassed all the hard work. Your dog has a food sensitivity going on. So you can go back to testing to see which food it is, or you could just keep them on the hydrolyzed food for a while until things get straightened out, and then start adding different proteins one at a time to see what it is. But a lot of times there's a dog will have EPI and IBD. Right. So it's a combination. It's tough to figure out because you think you're working with EPI, which is a conundrum in itself.
Oh, and, yeah, sure.
And then you got this other thing to deal with. But yeah. this is another thing with our foundation. We have the 24/7 forum that people will type in and we tell them, please take pictures of the poop, post the pictures of the poop here. We can help you. And we'll work with them and we go with them step by step by step because, you know, the vets know to do this, but you can't have a vet on call 24/7. You know, you feed your dog at 7 o'clock at night and then it has this reaction. At least this way you can get on the form and, you know, there's always somebody there that mm-hmm. can help you. And we work with people to go step by step. One of the things that when people come to us and we find out what the test values are and it is EPI, or even if it isn't and it's just IBD, because sometimes it's just IBD, mm-hmm. We give these people a template. It's a EPI log, a journal, to where we teach people how to keep track of results of different things they try, how to try things, how many days, what to look for, and you record everything. And we encourage them to keep this record, work with show their vet this, because a lot of times people will say something to the vet, but the vet, you know, you say it and he may interpret it differently, or what you are saying is not exactly right.
Well, that's, so, yeah.
Yeah.
I so understand that.
The vet will see this tracking list and, right. and it's like, it's amazing what will pop up from this. We had one lady who had an EPI dog and the diet is like the finding the right diet for an EPI dog is like finding the final piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. Once you find the right diet, it's like, oh my God, everything works well now. You know, along with the enzymes and the B12 and the, you know, the prebiotics or probiotics, et cetera. Anyway, took her 2 years to figure out what was wrong with her, why her dog wasn't straightening out. And it happened to be sunflower oil that's in dog food. All the dog food she was trying, why some worked and some didn't, was she started cross-referencing all the ingredients and it turned out to be sunflower. Now, who would have thought sunflower oil would have triggered their dog like that? So it's little things like this that we work with people step by step, any hour of the day to help them along. And it works. Yeah.
I know that now you're talking about the diet and we'll get to that shortly. But for IBD, we've actually had some issues with that. And Royal Canin has a really fantastic hydrolyzed dog food.
Yeah. That we like Altamino.
We have found anyway that did the trick for that particular dog. And that's the other thing.
Yes.
When you're talking about specific diets, of course, IBD, dog has IBD, another dog has IBD. What may work for one might not actually be the golden ticket for another, so to speak.
Thank you for bringing this up.
Yeah. So you're right. It is like almost like finding a needle in a haystack, especially when you have EPI in addition to IBD. Mm-hmm.
Tell people with the
full-time job.
Yeah, well, we tell them, we said there's five brands. Start off with Royal Canin Altamino. That seems to work best because it's made with cornstarch. For some reason, that's more agreeable with our EPI dogs. But we say if one doesn't work, don't give up. Go to the next brand, then the next brand. Just keep on trying. And you will hit one that works for your particular dog.
Yeah, I agree with that. You just hope that the pet owner has the tenacity to follow through.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling, unfortunately, some end up in shelters because their owners can't deal with it.
Yeah.
Which is
hard.
Really sad for the dog.
Yeah.
When they, you know, when they need the help the most, they're, you know, tossed aside, basically.
Well, in regards to that, I do want to share a little piece. We've had obviously many, many people with dogs with EPI. And once they've hit upon, what I like to say is effectively managing EPI is finding the right balance of the recommended EPI protocol. Well, quite a few people who have had EPI dogs have found that balance and have been so successful that when it came time to get another dog, they get an EPI dog from a shelter because they know what to do. They get the game and they know, you know, they don't get nervous anymore when things don't work out because they know that's just temporary. You keep on trying, you'll find it.
Well,
so
God bless them.
It's nice. Yeah. It gives everybody a real good feeling to when someone comes back on the form and says, by the way, we adopted another EPI dog because we know what to do now.
Right. So that is wonderful. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so you touched on this a little bit, but how is EPI diagnosed? So you find that vet that you're talking about. But by the way, I just want to cut in for a second here. Our veterinarians that we use, they're farm vet and compassion vets too. And I find the same thing that you do. They're incredibly practical people. I just love that. I love that combination of farm vet and compassion vet in one.
Yes. Yeah. The practicality of, you know, says it all. Before I get into how you diagnose, I do want to say one thing about vets. We get an awful lot of questions from people. Well, my vet doesn't know much about EPI. I need to find a vet that knows something about EPI. No, the best EPI vets, and this is over many years that we have noticed, are a lot of times vets that know very little about EPI, but they're passionate about treating your dog. They go do research on their own. They get all excited because they have an EPI patient and they want to fix it. And if you find a vet that is willing to work with you, not just tell you what to do, sometimes or all the time, let me rephrase that, those are the best vets, the ones that are willing to listen to you. If you have an idea or a thought, they need to be a vet that you can go to and say, hey, I want to try this. And they're willing to work out of the box, think outside the box, but they're also willing to say, okay, that's not going to work because blah, blah, blah. Because they've got the education, they can guide you, but they should also be open to listening to you. It's a two-way street. And what we tell people is you don't necessarily need a vet well-versed in EPI. You need a vet that will work with you, truly work with you. Check with your neighbors, family, and friends in the town. Find out what vet kind of, you know, fits this role. And, go with that.
The message I'm getting here is that your vet doesn't have to know it all, but they have to know, they have to have the tools to find the information.
And be passionate.
Help you and be passionate. Okay, that's good advice.
Okay. The way to diagnose EPI is, you know, obviously you take the dog to the vet. The first thing they're going to do is test for Giardia. Then the test is going to come back negative. Then they're going to try to give you metronidazole. Don't do it right away. I mean, metronidazole is a good drug. It's used for many things, but please, if you think your dog has EPI, don't let your vet give you metronidazole. Okay, this is why. Well, first, let me go back. What you do is if you and the vet, you have no idea what's going on with the dog. The dog has big cow patty plops. Tell the vet, you know, if it has any of the symptoms I mentioned before, can we test for EPI with a blood test? It's called a TLI blood test. It's a trypsin-like immunoreactivity test. It's hard for me to say the word. That's why we call it TLI. And say it's going to cost $250. It may sound like a lot of money. However, you're way better off spending that money getting the test done so you don't spin your wheels looking for what in the world is wrong with your dog, because the symptoms of EPI are so similar to so many other things that you'll just go on and on and on. And even though you may not have this test done, you will spend so much money on supplements, on antibiotics, on food, trying to figure out what in the world is going on. So you call your vet. You ask them, you know, if you get to this point, I would like my dog tested for EPI. I need a TLI blood test done. Now, to take the TLI blood test, the blood needs to be, your dog needs to be food fasted for about 12 hours. So we always recommend scheduling the test first thing in the morning, because, you know, by the dog eats lunch, let's say, and not dinner, you know, goes through the night. There's your 12 hours.
Right.
Draw the blood in the morning, poof, then you feed them. When you're having the blood drawn, for the TLI test, ask your vet to also draw enough blood and test the B12. Because just in case it is EPI, over 80% of these dogs have low B12 also. And you need to, if you just give them enzymes and they have low B12 and you don't know about it, they're not going to get any better. And then you're going to say, well, the enzymes aren't working. Well, the enzymes are working, but you don't know that because now it's the B12 that's messing the dog up. So everything is connected.
That goes hand in hand.
Okay. Yeah, everything is connected. And that's why we say you have to treat the whole dog.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, they don't have the money. So we will say if you don't have the money, go ahead and give enzymes with your vet's blessing. However, start saving your money to run that TLI test. And a lot of people, and this is the bad thing, a lot of people, you know, because they don't have it, will give the enzymes, but then they'll say, oh, the enzymes are working, so I don't need to do the test. Please, please, please do not do that. We have had a couple of people on our forum over the years who have done this and their dog died. And their dog died from something else because the dog never had EPI. They died of something that could have been treated, like tick disease.
Okay.
So it was unintended consequences. I mean, the vet was trying to do them a favor by not charging them for a test, assuming the enzymes worked. But once again, a lot of the symptoms of EPI are very similar to so many other things. So you want to do the test, just get it over with, do the test, one and done. So you know, is this what you're dealing with or not? And you can move on. So that's why we really put, I mean, you could give enzymes for a few months, even a half a year, and it won't hurt the dog, but you don't want to give it forever, because what will happen is then it can create loose stools if the dog doesn't need the enzymes and it's getting all these enzymes. Or you can be treating the dog for something it doesn't have and missing what is going on with the dog, and the dog, there can be serious consequences, and it has happened.
Yeah.
So
we've actually touched base on this quite a bit through this whole season three, covering the 20 most common health issues of senior German Shepherds.
Uh-huh.
Is just about every one podcast blog post. I sound like a broken record about take your dog to the vet, make sure you have a full blood panel done, CBC,
yes.
To find out what it is, not just to find out what is going on, but to rule out other things, like you're saying, that are very treatable.
Yeah.
It can be a very simple treatment.
Okay.
So don't be a Google doctor.
Yeah. One thing I do want to say, the regular CBC blood panel will not show EPI.
It is a special TLI.
Test. Yeah.
You need
yeah.
a special TLI special for blood EPI. Blood. Sure.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So then here, you're talking about scores for the TLI test.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about here? So you're saying there's variations of
yes.
epi?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, if your dog has EPI, that means its pancreas has atrophied. It ate itself. It died. It ain't coming back. Okay. So first of all, some people say, well, what if I do this? No, it's not coming back. At least we don't know how to make it come back just yet. Okay. Let's put it that way. The score is, if the TLI blood test result comes back at 2.5 or less, the dog has EPI. Now, some people will say, oh, my dog's score was 0.1, so it has it real bad. No, that doesn't mean that. What it means is your dog just fell in the parameters of it having EPI. However, this has nothing to do with the scores. There was a test done quite a few years ago with about either 10 dogs, 11 years, or 11 dogs in 10 years. I don't remember which when they followed all these dogs, both parents had EPI. Not all the dogs when they were tested had EPI. However, when they died, they did a necropsy on them, and they found that some dogs actually had damage in their pancreas to where it had atrophied a little bit. So it had a little EPI going on, but it never showed any symptoms. And others had, it was in varying degrees, which I always thought was rather interesting. Now, this was from two parents who both had EPI. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, that's why I say if your dog, well, I'll get into maybe what's going on later, a little further. But technically right now, if your dog has the TLI test done, the test results come back at 2.5 or below, your dog has EPI. Start looking at the four aspects of treating it with enzymes, diet, B12, and managing SID. Doesn't mean you have to address all of these, but it means you better start being on the lookout for all of these, because one of them you may have to address, another you may not, or you may have to address all these issues. Then if you have scores between 2.5 and 5.7, that means, okay, there's something going on in the pancreas. It's not normal, but it's not EPI yet. We call that subclinical EPI. We call it SEPI, S-E-P-I. And what we're right now, we're involved in a microbiota metabolomic study. And just a little bit, it hasn't been published yet, but from what we can tell, out of these dogs that had SEPI, 50% of them go on to develop EPI, but the other 50% don't. Not a clue why. But anyway, so something is going on. Okay. So what we recommend is if the score comes back between 2.5 and 5.7, pay attention, watch your dog, retest them again, whether it's in 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, or a year. Just retest them. Okay. Because you want to see if this segued into EPI or not. Okay. A lot of times if they're 2.5, 2.7, 3.0, the vet, and rightly so, will put the dog on enzymes anyway. Now, interestingly enough, just to, in case anybody has a question, if your dog is on enzymes, those enzymes will not interfere with the TLI test. Okay. If your dog has EPI, it will still show on the TLI test whether or not your dog is taking enzymes or not. So you never have to stop the enzymes to retest your dog for EPI. Okay. Now let's fast forward. So after 5.7, technically your dog doesn't have EPI or subclinical EPI, nothing. We have had a good handful of people that have contacted us. They have, their dog has all the symptoms of EPI. They ran the TLI test. The blood test comes back, nothing. Their TLI score was in the teens. And this is only in the teens this has happened. Well, fast forward to 6 months, 9 months, a year, all those symptoms are still present in the dog. The vet and the pet owner have taken the dog to the vet multiple times. They can't find anything else wrong with the dog. They have no idea what's going on. We strongly recommend retesting the dog yet again, because we've had a handful of dogs who have had TLI scores in the teens. A year later, they develop EPI. Okay. So even though it's not subclinical, it's not EPI when first done, something fishy is going on here.
Right, the symptoms are there.
Yeah, did turn into EPI. But where I'm going with this is also don't stop looking for something else. But if you don't find anything else, retest it in another year for EPI just to cover, just because we've seen cases turn up where it turned into EPI after all.
Even with a normal score.
Even with a normal score. But they were in the teen, the score was in the teens. And like I said, this only has happened with a handful of dogs. But to me, that's enough to set up a red flag and say, hey, it's not absolute.
Right. Just the symptoms in and of itself would be a red flag for me.
And as long as it's not, you've really proven
ruled out other things.
You've ruled out other stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
I am curious here. So you have the normal scores for canines and also felines.
Oh yeah. Cats get it too.
That's what I was going to ask. Yes. So I'm not sure if you know this or not, but we do have cats here at the sanctuary as well. And I, again, clueless about EPI, I had no idea cats could get it too.
Yes. Usually when cats get it, they get it because of chronic pancreatitis.
Okay.
Usually. And their scores are different. As you'll notice, 12.0 is normal. So anything below that is SEPI or EPI. Years, they give them enzymes just like we do with
That's
the
what
dogs.
I was gonna ask.
Yes. And they used to say, oh, cats don't get SID, you know, small intestinal dysbiosis, which was called SIBO. Okay. That's one of the four aspects that you have to manage with the whole dog if they have EPI. And so they used to say, oh, we're not going to give them antibiotics. You know, they just don't get it. Evolution. They've changed. Now they say, oh yeah, cats do get SID and SIBO. Yeah, you do give them Thailand antibiotic powder. Oh, so nice. there's a, you know, in case you can't get the stools under good control with the enzymes. And also with cats. Now with dogs, over 80% have low B12. With cats, 100% of them have insufficient B12. Wow. So they need B12. So if you've got 100%. A cat with EPI, they have to have B12. Yeah.
It just goes hand in hand with cats.
Yes, just go ahead.
And also to, I would imagine, to check their stool would be considerably difficult because it's in a, well, kitty it's box. In a litter box too. And then there's the clumping kitty litter.
It's runny. It's runny. I've got pictures of it. Yeah. I've got pictures of it on our website because I do have a section for cats. And yes, and actually we've been contacted by a sanctuary in India. They had a tiger that had EPI. We've been contacted from North Carolina. There was a tiger sanctuary. The tiger area, she had EPI, and you would not believe the amount of enzymes we had to give her.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yes, but right. she, you know, we have pictures in her story on the website, and there were a couple of tigers throughout United States that developed EPI, and actually horses can also get EPI, but you never hear this. It's a very, obviously very, very low case of there happenings with EPI in horses, but yes, a horse can get EPI. So, and since I'm on the subject, they used to say when I first started this, the researchers said, oh, it's tough to raise money because, you know, it's not, you can't connect it to human EPI, because when people get EPI, EPI is a secondary condition of something like cystic fibrosis, whereas dogs, when they get EPI, it's a standalone condition, so you can't connect. Well, I don't know if you've listened on the radio or TV, but now you'll see ads for, have you got EPI? And they're talking to people. All of a sudden now, people are getting EPI as a standalone condition, just like dogs. Mm. So things are evolving, and it's like, what in the world is going on?
Our diets.
That's
my thought.
We've thought of that too. Food. Yeah. Something's wrong.
That's the big connector, I think. Yeah. I'm not sure, but that's what I would go with. Okay. So you've touched some on how EPI is treated, but if you could go through steps again, how EPI is treated and a little more in depth, because it is not just a one and done.
You're not
giving a pill or a powder and calling it a day. This is, like you're saying, this is steps.
Treat the whole dog. Yes.
Okay. And a trial and process.
Yes, I believe. Keep notes. What we do is keep a journal. Okay. Basically, you know, there's the four things: the enzymes, the B12, the diet, and keeping small intestinal dysbiosis. We call it SID now. They used to call it SIBO, small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. But they've changed that name to SID, small intestinal dysbiosis, because what they found is it's not an overgrowth of bad bacteria like with EPI dogs. When they have SID, they don't have enough bacteria, and they don't have enough of a variety of bacteria. Oh. So it's not an overgrowth of bad. It's a messed up gut flora, mm-hmm. you know, totally messed up.
Microbiome.
So anyway, So, and that is the cornerstone of why it's so hard to find a diet, et cetera, with these dogs. But once you happen upon finding the right balance of these four things, the enzymes, the B12, if needed, finding the right diet, and treating SID to the best of your ability, if necessary, because sometimes you don't have to. Once you find the right balance of all of these, it's amazing how well your dog does. It's taking care of EPI sometimes is no harder than having a second cup of coffee in the morning. Okay. But that's after you find the balance.
Right.
Okay. Enzymes. Here in the United States, we're lucky we have powdered enzymes. Powdered enzymes are the most stable and the easiest and the best way to give enzymes to an EPI dog. You can give pills, but they usually don't work, or they don't work well enough, because you usually end up having to crush them mm-hmm. and incubate them anyway, just like you do with the powder. So why bother? And in the end, you're paying way more for the pills than you are the powder. Then there's enteric coated enzymes like Creon, which is what they use for people. For whatever reason, if the dog can't take the powdered enzymes, you can go to Creon, which is, in other words, you know, the contact pills you used to take, and you open up the capsule and you see all these little tiny spheres and they've got like a coating on. That's what Creon looks like. And it's the same thing. It's enteric coated. Now, they're both given, their potency is different, and they're both given differently. But I'll go with the enzyme powder, because that's the main way to treat EPI dogs here in the United States. Basically, if you there's a variety of pharmaceutical brands that you get from your vet, or you can go with alternative brands that are food grade, with Enzyme Diane. There's a bunch. I have a whole list of enzyme companies on my website. But basically, it doesn't matter if it's pharmaceutical or food grade. If you're giving dry food, kibble, you start with 1 level teaspoon of powdered enzymes per 1 cup of food. You add a little water or room temperature or some kind of liquid just to moisten the food so the powder sticks to the food. The reason why we do this is the powder is very caustic. When the dogs eat, ingest the powder, 70% of it is destroyed by your bile acids in the esophagus going down the digestive tract. But that's a whole other issue. I get into all these details on the website. I explain why, but it's probably too much for a podcast. But anyway, so you start off with 1 teaspoon. Sometimes the dogs will need more. Sometimes the dogs will need less. So you kind of gauge and see if it's working for your dog. But start off with the rule of thumb, 1 level teaspoon of enzymes per 1 cup of dry food, moistened it. Then you mix it, let it sit for 20 minutes because the enzymes are very caustic. So this kind of softens the caustic properties of the enzymes in the dog eat. A lot of times if you don't let the enzymes incubate, what will happen is the dogs will develop mouth sores, you know, because of the caustic properties. Right. Well, then they don't want to eat. Well, then that's a whole other issue you have. Right. So you just don't want that. If you feed canned food or homemade food, because of the liquid content in the home food or canned food, you lessen the amount of enzymes. So if that's the case, you start off with 1/2 teaspoon to 3/4 teaspoon with the wet food and see how that goes. If you feed a combo, my rule of thumb is just go ahead and give 1 level teaspoon, but it all depends on the person, you know, what they're most comfortable with and what it seems their dog needs. So you either up or down the enzymes to begin with. Usually they need more in the beginning. And then once things settle down and once the dog is stable for what I call a month. And when I say stable, what I mean is if your dog is going to the bathroom 1 to 3 times a day, the poops look like Tootsie Rolls or they're normal looking poops, good color, good structure, whatever. Then you start trying to reduce the amount of enzymes you need to sustain that dog's EPI condition. And the way we do that is you, instead of giving 1 level teaspoon, reduce it by 1/8 teaspoon and see how well the dog does. Give it 3 or 5 days. Then if the poos still look good, reduce it by 1/8 teaspoon. A lot of people are able to reduce the enzymes once their dog is stable to maybe 1/2 teaspoon. Per cup of food, which is really pretty good because the enzymes are expensive.
Is that per meal?
Yes. Yes. That's another thing. No.
Okay.
Per meal.
Okay.
When you have an EPI dog, every piece of food that goes in their mouth has to have enzymes on it.
Don't cheat.
Don't give any treats. You don't want to play around with any of that stuff because you'll mess them up. You'll never know what's working or not until your dog is stable. Once your dog is stable, once you know you're giving the right amount of enzymes, blah, 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 then you could fool around and say, okay, let's see if they could take a little treat. But if you're going to, when you start testing this, you have to test it on a stable EPI dog, and you have to start with giving them a treat or something very small without enzymes, but you have to give it within 1 hour of when they had an enzymed meal, either 1 hour before or 1 hour after, no more, and see how they do. Don't push it. Give it 3 to 5 days. See how the poos are. If the poos are okay, extend it. Give them a treat maybe 2 hours after an enzyme meal, but give them very little. As an example, my Izzy, you know, who I founded EPI for, she was able to have 10 little pieces of kibble without enzymes. That's it. But that was enough. That worked for me when I was rewarding her when we were training. But some people can do more. Some can't do any of that. Some can never reduce the enzymes. Some can. It's worth trying because the enzymes are expensive. Mm-hmm. Then the other thing about enzymes, real quick, is that for some reason, right around the 4th or 5th year of them being on enzymes, say you've had them on a teaspoon, then you've reduced it to 1/2 teaspoon and everything's going along great. All of a sudden, they've been on enzymes for 4 or 5 years. And all of a sudden their poos are getting sloppy and you haven't changed anything. Well, what it is their body is aging. They're not utilizing everything as efficiently as they used to. So they might need a pinch more of enzymes. Before you get nervous about anything, just give them a pinch more, see if that works. And if it fixes everything, that's what the problem was.
That makes perfect sense. And I was actually wondering this in my mind and was going to bring it up at some point because, of course, we all change as we age. So I was thinking the same thing. What might work for an EPI dog when they're 3 might not work for them when they're 7.
Yes, so that does happen.
So yep. there's tweaks that need to be made along yes. the way.
Whole okay. lot of tweaking. That's why we advise everybody to keep an EPI journal. Mm-hmm. Also, if the dog has a pork allergy, because these enzymes are porcine pancreas derived, they're freeze-dried pork pig pancreas. If the dog has a pig allergy, there is such a thing as beef. So in other words, your dog has EPI, you give it a whole bunch of rice or oatmeal or whatever, food-based food, and their stools are still sloppy. Well, what's happening is you're giving them the enzymes to fix EPI, but the fiber in the food that you're feeding them is destroying those enzymes, so it's not working.
Yeah, so, and you're wasting a lot of money.
Yeah, so, but this is not hard and fast either, because we have had some dogs who don't do well at all unless they have some grain in their food. So as a rule of thumb, we tell everybody, when you start off with an EPI, give grain-free or a low-fiber content food, something with 4% or less fiber content. Usually 3.5% works great, or 3%. After your dog is stable, then go ahead and start adding a little rice to their meal. See what happens. See if you see rice coming out the other end, or if the dog is absorbing it, because that's the only way you're going to figure out how much of your dog's digestive system is destroying, the fiber is destroying the enzymes. Mm-hmm. So some dogs need fiber, but the majority of them don't. This is why we say start with a low fiber food. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Makes sense.
Okay. So, and there's another issue with this. With fiber, and I have a whole page dedicated to this, and it'll make your head spin, so I won't go too much into it. But like I said, there's four aspects to EPI. There's the enzymes, there's the B12, there's the diet, and there's SID, small intestinal dysbiosis. Well, what fixes SID is fiber. However, what promotes SID is fiber. So here you are sitting on top of the fence saying, which way should I go? It's crazy. And the problem with commercial foods is they'll say fiber content, but you have no idea what kind of fiber is in it, because every piece of food has all different kinds of fiber, but it's like there's fermentable fiber and non-fermentable fiber. Some is good for EPI dogs with SID. Some is not so good. Some you can give and it'll help it, but if you give too much of it, it'll create loose stools. So it's a real minefield dealing with fiber. So this is why we say back off of the fiber to begin with, and then slowly try little bits and pieces of your own fiber to see what agrees with your dog and what doesn't. So yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. I spoke earlier about the lady who found that her dog had an issue with sunflower oil. Finding the right diet with an EPI dog is like the final piece of the puzzle, which I did mention. So keep a journal, write down all when you're trying to find the right food and it's just not working, be sure to write down every single ingredient, because it could be one of those little itty bitty minor ingredients that you're not even thinking, and compare from one food to another. Try different brands. Right. Until you find something that writes, but cross-reference all those little items, because that's what's going to give you the clue on what's tripping your dog up. The other thing that people don't realize is with EPI dogs, too many carbs will also make those poos sloppy, even when on enzymes. So you want to be careful not to overload on the carbs. The other thing is, and this is, I didn't realize this until halfway through my life with EPI, is that sometimes you think, oh, my dog can't have chicken. Well, sometimes what it is your dog can have chicken. It just can't have all the chicken that you are feeding it. It's too much. So sometimes it's too much, of one ingredient that's in, like a lot of times people will buy beef and rice kibble and then another beef and rice. Well, how come one works and the other one doesn't? Sometimes it's the amount of that ingredient. It's too much in one and not enough in the other. Whatever. So so it's all these little tangents to diet. And it's very hard to figure out. That's why we strongly recommend keeping a journal or log record.
Well, sure. It's a lot to store in your brain.
Oh, you can't. Sure, you can't. So. I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to remember what that poo looks like. Well, because I fed this, that, or whatever. And then a couple of weeks later, it's like, was that poo for this food or was that poo for that food? So you do forget. And we even suggest, go ahead, take pictures of the poop and put it next to, when you're keeping records, put it next to that food item that you tried. So you get a visual of what the results were.
Absolutely. Thank God for smartphones. Huh? Yes. We carry them everywhere and we can take pictures. And I have a neighbor right over here. Uh-huh. Very close to the sanctuary, and I know he's looked at me sideways. I'm out there checking poop, making sure it looks normal, and all that stuff. So absolutely, you can tell an awful lot about a dog's health from their excrement. So check it out and take pictures.
Yes, we do. Say, you do not know how many times I was waiting for my website to be shut down by the powers that be because we had so many pictures of poop on it. But it's like, hey, you can, like you said, that is the biggest indicator of what's going on with your dog internally.
Sure.
Absolutely. It's the cheapest way to figure out stuff instead of running all these tests.
Right. And then you go out there with a baggie on your hand and grab a sample of it and take it to your vet.
Yeah. I know. When my dog first had it, it was nighttime and I started putting little, the flags out marking the poo. And my husband thought, oh good, we're getting DirecTV coming in. He thought they were flagging it to run the lines. No, that's little plops of poo I got to pick up. So he was a little disappointed.
I'm sure.
Anyway, with the diet, another thing I wanted, so you obviously know that there's a lot that goes into it. Sometimes when an EPI dog has a concurrent condition, mm-hmm. and I've been fighting vets on this and everybody, please, if you have a dog that has EPI and IBD or EPI and diabetes or EPI and God knows what, whatever the other, or kidney disease, okay, whatever, give the other, when it comes to diet, give the other condition preference in diet, okay? Because you can't monkey around with kidney disease. You can't monkey around with diabetes. There's no cheating. Okay. Right. I mean, it's a serious condition. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do is if the diet is not exactly great for EPI, I mean, it's okay, but the stools are getting a little soft, then go ahead and just give more enzymes to the diet. Okay. Mm-hmm. To cover the fact that it's not optimal for the EPI condition, give the other condition preference and diet choice. Okay. Sometimes you can work with the two of them. Sometimes you can't. And if you can't, the other condition gets preference. Okay. I did want to bring that up.
Right. There is a hierarchy.
Yeah, there really is. And I know I've read in medical journals where, you got to give EPI diet preference. I'm thinking, no. You could make do, cover it with extra enzymes if you have to.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just stop you there for a second. You're saying there that's a little controversial.
In it was. Yeah.
There are. Okay. Okay. Yeah. But your stance is that you treat kidney disease or diabetes first, and then EPI second, mm-hmm. because you can always give more
enzymes.
The enzymes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And there isn't that much freedom with the other. If it's a serious condition, I don't mean something minor.
Okay. I understand. Right. Yeah. Kidney disease and diabetes are serious.
Yeah. Yeah. Been there, done that.
Yes, that's too with the kidney disease.
Okay. With B12, I said, over 80% of EPI dogs have low or insufficient B12. If your vet tests for B12, and we've seen this a lot where the vet will say, it's in the normal range, but it's actually low normal. If it's in the 400s, that's low normal. An EPI dog's B12 needs to be in the 500s or 600s would be optimal. It could go sky high. That's perfectly fine. We don't worry about that. But if it's below 500, we worry. Tell your vet you want your dog supplemented with B12. The reason is everything is connected. When an EPI dog has low B12 or low normal B12, the vet will say, it's okay. Then 6 months down the road, all of a sudden your dog's not doing good. You have no idea why. The vet's not going to check the B12 because the B12 was in the normal quote unquote range.
Right.
What happened was the B12 plummeted. And when the B12 plummets, a lot of times that in itself will produce loose stools. Another thing is when you have SID, small intestinal dysbiosis, that munches away at whatever temporary B12 stores the dog has. So that creates low B12. So you've got everything working against a good store of B12. So this is probably why EPI dogs, 80% of them, have a problem with B12. So when you give B12, don't just go to the store and pick up a bottle of B12 pills and think that's going to work.
And thank you for saying this. Go ahead.
Okay. When I first started this, they said, oh, the only thing you could do is give B12 shots, which is cyanocobalamin B12. And it's 1,000 mcgs of B12. You know, that's a high dose of B12. Well, I'd say about 80%. Maybe more than 80% of these dogs did okay, but some the B12 results never came as expected. Well, we started using methylcobalamin B12 pills, 1,000 mcg with folate in it and intrinsic factor. There's a whole story behind this too. I won't get into it, but it started working. We started telling the researchers about this. So the researchers did a test on this, you know, a study. Huh, surprise, surprise, B12 pills work. So this is what I mean when sometimes anecdotal evidence, and of course, we were basing this on individual blood tests with EPI dogs going to the researchers saying, hey, these B12 pills are working. They're saying, no, that doesn't work. Then they ran a test and, oh, wow, it does work. So anyway, yes, you can use pills, but they're special pills because they're high in B12. What I found is, even the researcher said sometimes the cyanocobalamin version of B12 doesn't work. If this happens, you have to use a different version of B12. One is hydroxycobalamin and the other one is methylcobalamin. We happened upon a company that started producing B12 pills with methylcobalamin in it, intrinsic factor, and folate. All of a sudden, these dogs were doing way better than they did with the cyanocobalamin. So we even had a clinic that stopped using cyanocobalamin completely and went to these pills because they had such a positive response to it. But there's also another pill that the researchers came up with that is cyanocobalamin, but it's for dogs. It's a pill, and it works, I'd say, 95% of the time. If it doesn't work, then switch to the other pill. But there are B12 pills that you can use. It's on my website that will work. A lot of times I feel bad for these people who have dogs that freak out going to the vets just because they need a weekly B12 shot. Right. Just give them a pill. You know, you don't have to take them anywhere. They don't have to freak out and it'll work. So
just to clarify, not all B12 is created equal for these.
Right.
Yeah, I want to clarify that.
Go on our website or your vet will, the vet will actually tell you this particular B12 pill to use, or will tell you this particular B12 pill to use, or you have another choice. You know, we'll tell you what the community mostly uses. It's up to you, whatever works for you and your dog. But we do strongly advise is no matter what we tell you on our website, please show it to your vet, share it with your vet, you and your vet and EPI for dogs. We all have to work together to get that dog feeling good. So yeah, you know, all the resources are there, but you can use a pill, you can use shots. The one thing that we've been fighting with vets, and we're finally changing the tide. Texas A&M actually has it on their website, but I think it's the small print and people don't tend to read everything. If your dog has a chronic condition and they have low B12, you give them B12, you know, for a period of time, a regimen, and you bring up their B12. Well, once they come to the upper mid-range level of B12, don't stop. Just because they're where they're supposed to be does not mean this is the end of it. What that means is now that you brought the B12 level up, you need to work with your vet to figure out, okay, how much B12 do I have to give now and how often just to maintain that B12? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is weekly, sometimes it's biweekly, sometimes it's only monthly, sometimes it's once every 3 months. It all depends on that dog. But if it's a chronic condition, once you have a problem with B12, you have to maintain it to one degree or another. If it's just that the dog had a situation where its B12 plummeted, then yes, you give B12, you bring it up to the level and you stop. That's it. The end of story. It's not the end of the story with a chronic condition. So that's a failing of a lot of vets. I don't think they read the whole thing where if it's chronic, and there's that word in Texas A&M right there. Right. If it's a chronic condition, you have to maintain that level. Depending on how much and how often is, you have to figure that out, but you have to maintain it.
But you say it's in small print, but that small print being missed could create havoc in this EPI dog again, because the B12 was treated, but it wasn't maintained.
Right. And it will come sooner or later. It will plummet it again.
Yeah, maybe that print needs to be bigger.
Bigger. or just underline it, you know?
Something,
Because we've had a lot of cases in the beginning. This used to happen and they didn't know what was wrong. Well, what happened was the B12 was in the lower normal range. Mm-hmm. So they never were treated and it continued to go down. And since it was when they first tested in normal, according to that, no problem. There was a problem. So
That's true for lots of things too. Here at Woody's Place, we are huge on doing blood work.
Uh-huh.
I have no qualms. Do you want to do blood work? Yes, I want to do blood work because what might be low, let's just say it's a level that might be low 1 month. If we test it again 3 months later, it could be really low.
Yeah.
So anytime that a function or a level is in the lower range, I watch it. Oh yeah, definitely watch it. And even if they say, oh, come back in 6 months, I'm usually back in four because I want to know what's going on with anything. So I hear what you're saying about levels being low in an epi dog. I would think with an epi dog, and maybe I'm wrong, I would think you would need to be more up on your dog's levels with epi than most dogs.
Yes. Yeah.
I would probably go every 6 months to get blood work done.
Now, well, we do it in the beginning quite a few times and then we slack off. But once the owner gets the hang of things, you start noting, you get the hand, you're not frightened anymore. Like, oh my God, my dog is sick. I don't know why. You get the hand, you get a handle on EPI. And then it's to the point where, oh, a little sit is starting to happen. So I know how to manage this and you manage it. So you don't freak out anymore. You get things back in control, you know, because managing EPI in the beginning is like two steps forward and one step backward until you get the hang of it, you know? And one thing about diet I did want to mention is a lot of times, and this has happened a lot of EPI dogs were on a commercial dog food that used sweet potatoes. Well, then sweet potatoes, I think the dog food companies realized how expensive it was. So they switched to peas and trying to claim peas as high protein and blah, blah, blah. Well, bad, very bad for EPI dogs. Peas literally will trigger SID, okay, just by themselves as a carb. They're one of the worst carb ingredients for an EPI dog. Anyway, long story short, sometimes some people would be feeding a particular brand of food to their EPI dog, and the dog's done well on it for a long time. All of a sudden, they're getting sick on it. You know, and when I say sick, I mean loose stools. A lot of times what had happened in the past was the company changed the formula of the dog food, and they do not have to publicize this. They've got a 6 months grace period where they don't have to let the public know that they've changed the formula. So if your dog is on the same dog food and it's been on it for a long time and all of a sudden it's not doing so well on it, it could be one of many things. But one of the things is call the dog food company and say, hey, have you recently changed the formula? It might be that. It might be something as simple as that. So I did want to mention that before I forget.
Well, that is important because they as food manufacturers, they want to cut cost and keep costs down. And pea protein, I see it in so many commercial brand dog foods. And we have several. We've had several over the course of Woody's Place, but a couple right now that are allergic to peas. Even Dr. Harvey's Canine Health, it's dehydrated food. We actually love this food. But it has peas in it. So I literally pick out all the peas. And you're right. It is a cheap alternative that many dogs are allergic to peas and can have them. So you do have to be careful about that though, and be vigilant about reading the dog food ingredients.
Yes. Well, we tell people to avoid products. You know, some dogs can handle peas, but we say if it's like the fourth or fifth ingredient on the bag, okay. But read the rest of the ingredients. If they have peas, then they have pea flour, then they have pea protein.
Right.
Stay away because they're dumping a whole bunch of peas in that food just as fillers. You don't need that food. So that's bad. So
absolutely. I wanted to ask you something about prebiotics and probiotics.
Okay, I'm getting to that with Sid. Okay. That's okay. Next. Okay. Okay. The four aspects of managing EPI is, like I said, the enzymes, the diet, the B12, which we covered. The last thing is SID, small intestinal dysbiosis. It used to be called SIBO. They changed the name. I think I already explained that. Anyway, when we first started in EPI, they used to say when you ran the cobalamin test, the B12 blood test, there's another facet to the blood test. It's called the folate score. And they used to say, oh, your dog doesn't have SIBO at that time, unless the folate score is high. Well, a lot of these dogs were still sick, no matter what you were doing. And it was SIBO or SID, what we call now. Well, fast forward to new research, you know, better technology, blah, blah, blah. What they found out now is that all EPI dogs have SID, no matter what the folate score is. So they no longer go by the folate score. Just ignore it completely. Unless it's below 7.7, then your dog has some kind of food sensitivity. Okay. They call it small distal proximal disease. So that's a whole nother bag. Anyway, I got that on the website too. But with SID, years ago, what they first recommended was antibiotics, okay, which is true, it works. However, what they found now with more research is that it's your gut flora. SID means your small intestine is all messed up. The gut flora just isn't right. With EPI dogs, they don't have enough bacteria. They don't have enough of a variety of bacteria. It's just not, your gut flora is just not right. So what they used to do is, you know, they got away, they started giving Thylan antibiotic, which worked great. It's a macrolide antibiotic. It doesn't kill all the bacteria. What it does is reduces the reproduction population of the bacteria. Whereas metronidazole, by the way, kills all the bacteria. Mm-hmm. That's why if you have a chronic condition like EPI, you don't want to give metronidazole, because once you give metronidazole, it will kill all the bacteria. Well, some of those bacteria that it kills will never, ever come back, no matter how many probiotics you give this poor dog. And they're starting off at a deficit to begin with. They don't have enough bacteria anyway, and they don't have enough variety. And now you've just killed some more soldiers. So you don't want to do that if you can avoid it. Okay. And now we're finding with Thylan works great. But what they found is that if an EPI dog has SID, if you first give it prebiotics, it's not bacteria, it's food for bacteria. Mm-hmm. So you're feeding the bacteria that's there and you're making the bacteria grow more and blah, blah, blah. So everybody's happy. Okay. Right. So that's great. Usually, well, they know for a fact that you can give prebiotics to any dog and prebiotics works. Probiotics, yes, it does work. There's a big push about it, but there's still some discrepancy, like, does it really work or doesn't it work? And now they think that the reason why they're not 100% sure on probiotics is not that it doesn't work, but that every dog's gut flora system is unique. So they're taking something off the wall, you know, standard off the shelf, trying to make something common fit into something unique. It may not work. Okay. So it's not that probiotics don't work. It's just that you don't know what kind of probiotics you may need for your particular dog's gut flora. Mm-hmm. So right now, what they also found is start with prebiotics, give your dog with SID prebiotics, see if that works. If that helps, but not enough, or if it doesn't work at all, we typically recommend slippery elm. Slippery elm is a powder. It's made from the inner bark of the American elm tree. It's a mucilage, so it coats the system, it relaxes everything, and it also has a prebiotic in it. It has a mucilage in it, which is out of the three short chain fatty acids. That's the one that helps with SID. Sorry, I get into too many details. Anyway.
No, I this is fascinating to me, and this is the second time this week I heard about slippery elm.
So yeah, I love it.
I'm paying attention.
Okay. Well, I've got a whole section on slippery elm on the website. It's amazing. Anyway, it doesn't work for all the dogs, but it works for about 90% of the dogs. It's cheap. You could buy a jar of it for like 10, 12 bucks. And you could use it for yourself. You could use it in your own food. I mean, it's a SID. If it doesn't help, then you resort to prebiotics with probiotics. And currently, you know, like as time goes on, we're hoping better and better probiotics come on the market, or probiotics that are more suited to conditions, you know, certain conditions. And they're working on that, but they're not there yet. But anyway, so right now what we're recommending for EPI dogs with bad SID sit out of control is Visbiome or Proviable. Those two seem to be really good. There's others that work. They're not the only two, but they're the two most popular probiotics with prebiotics in them that seem to work. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, then you want to go and say, okay, none of this is working. I've had the dog on probiotics for a month, blah, blah, blah. The dog's still sick. They can only have diarrhea for so long or else, things don't work out so well.
Right.
So then you say to them, okay, so say 3 weeks to a month. Then you go to the vet and say, okay, I want you to put my dog on Thailand antibiotic. Thailand is a macrolide antibiotic. It does not kill all the kill all the bacteria in the gut. It reduces reproduction. Of course, if you give Thailand forever full strength, over time, obviously all those bacteria will die too. But the way we use it, no. So what we do is give it for 45 days, twice a day with breakfast and dinner. And I have the Thailand dosing regimen on the website. And usually that will work. What vets do not suggest, but I talked to the researcher and he said, yeah, that works, is when you finish the 45-day regimen, instead of stopping Thailand completely, I have a method where you slowly withdraw from it over the next few weeks and then stop. And that seems to work better than stopping cold turkey at 45 days, SID. But what they found is that if a dog has an issue with SID, it's out of control, mm-hmm. that if you can treat it with the prebiotics and probiotics, the fix, so to speak, or keeping it under control, lasts longer if you can treat it that way versus treating it with Thailand. The Thailand works, very quickly, but the fix doesn't last as long. So they're thinking if you can at all possible try the prebiotics and probiotics, if you can happen upon the right mixture of everything, go that route first, which is something I did want to mention. And with Giardia, I know because of my background with EPI, what I do is if my dog has Giardia, I will treat it with Thailand instead of metronidazole. It takes longer, mm-hmm. but it will work.
That's what I'm gonna just see if we can try that route, because I cringe when they say metronidazole, because I realize the havoc that it's going to wreak on the whole microbiome
system.
And like you're saying, just giving prebiotics, probiotics isn't going to bring everything back to life, the good mm-hmm. bacteria back to life. So that is a last resort, but I'm going to consider the Thailand now. Thank you.
With colitis, same thing. They treat it with metronidazole, but I also treated a dog with Thailand who had colitis with mm-hmm. Thailand as opposed to metronidazole. For exactly the same thing. I know it's not the right drug. It's not the optimal drug to treat, but you kind of hedge your bets and think, well, I'm not so sure I want to destroy all the bacteria, because then I'm opening up whole other host of issues possible.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I guess it would depend on the case.
It does.
The severity of the case.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's a tick disease. You need metronidazole. You don't fool around with that.
Right.
Doxycycline. I'm sorry. Doxycycline.
Doxycycline.
So you just give it. No questions asked.
We have Lyme disease. Well, we're in the Poconos, so we have Lyme disease. I've had it twice now, actually. Wow. Doxycycline, it's just, ugh.
Yeah, but you do what you got to do.
Exactly. So, okay. So let's talk about the prognosis of dogs with EPI. And you have, I keep saying EPI, EPI. I have to say again, that's how it was pronounced to me. So I keep saying EPI, but then you said SEPI too. So I started thinking, okay. All right. So what is the prognosis for dogs with EPI?
Excellent. Okay. If you have a dog with EPI, as long as you try to treat the whole dog to the best of your ability, and as long as they get enzymes, then the prognosis is excellent. In 14 years, over 3 million people that have been on our website, one dog has died from EPI. I read once where they said the death rate from EPI is 3%. So it's very, very minimal. I have not.
Okay. So is there anything else you would like to add?
Yes, I would really like to thank all of the staff of EPI for Dogs and the members who work tirelessly day after day. They put in many hours helping those in need in the EPI for Dogs support group, whether it's the forum or whether it's the Facebook page. Without all these volunteers, there wouldn't be a support group for these people needing help. So I just want to extend a thank you, a huge thank you to many, many people who have made EPI for Dogs a success by giving of their time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I totally hear you there. We need volunteers. That's what makes our organizations go round. That's for sure.
Yes.
And they give tirelessly of themselves. So, yep.
Yes, totally. They do. Many hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, this has been wonderful. And I appreciate all of your information. And I can't wait to get it out there to the public so they can learn about more about EPI in German Shepherds and dogs in general. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Take care.
Okay.
Okay. So is there anything else you would like to add?
Yes, I would really like to thank all of the staff of EPI for Dogs and the members who work tirelessly day after day. They put in many hours helping those in need in the EPI for Dogs support group, whether it's the forum or whether it's the Facebook page. Without all these volunteers, there wouldn't be a support group for these people needing help. So I just want to extend a thank you, a huge thank you to many, many people who have made EPI for Dogs a success by giving of their time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I totally hear you there. We need volunteers. That's what makes our organizations go round. That's for sure.
Yes.
And they give tirelessly of themselves. So, yep.
Yes, totally. They do. Many hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, this has been wonderful. And I appreciate all of your information. And I can't wait to get it out there to the public so they can learn about more about EPI in German Shepherds and dogs in general. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Take care.
Okay.